Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om. This morning I asked my dear longtime friend and wonderful devotee, Sankirtan Prabhu, to team teach. He's going to talk about Lord Varahadev, and I'll speak from the 10th canto. Okay, so, Sankirtan Prabhu. The mic? We have a wireless? Ah, okay.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Lokanath Swami Niti Namine. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine. Sri Varahadev Ki Jai. So this pastime of the Lord, as he appears, we have him here, as a boar, is in the third canto, starting from chapter 13 to about 19. So I'd like to first contextualize a little this event, how it matches with other the narrative, and then we will go a little in detail and keep the whole thing within 15 minutes. In the second canto, at the end of the second canto, mentioning of time, calculation of time is there, and then Sukadev Goswami says this is an interesting topic. It has been discussed between Maitreya and Vidura. So then we start the third canto with this exchange between Maitreya and Vidura. And first of all, we hear how Vidura meets Uddhava and then is instructed by Uddhava to go to Maitreya for instructions, considering Maitreya to be his senior. Like, that's the beginning. So then, when they meet, Vidura and Maitreya, Vidura asks some pertinent questions, and amongst them, basically four questions, Purusha avatars, Lila avatars, the Virat Roop, how the manifested world, it relates to the transcendental world of the Lord. So then we hear from chapter 4-5 until 12 about creation, and in that detailed description then Lord Brahma is part of the creation. Lord Brahma appears, and there when Lord Brahma appears, then it's explained how what Brahma does in the process. He creates nescience, the sense of death. He creates some positive things, sages, and then again some less positive, and also explains how he's allured or runs after his own daughter. And then there's the description of Satyarupa and Swayambhu Manu, the first created, or the first offsprings. Of course, not ordinary persons as we are. This is just at the beginning of creation. And then, at that time, there is Swayambhu Manu, who is ready to follow the instructions of his predecessors, or especially Lord Brahma, and the instruction is to create offsprings, and also then to rule according to dharmic principles, and then to perform yajna. So he's all ready to go. Now there's a problem. Yesterday we heard wonderfully how Nitya Tripita Mahaprabhu explains how Krishna is very cool. That's what the cowherd or the Vrijabhasis think of Krishna, is very cool. So here we have a problem. Lord Brahma realizes that the globe, as we see it here, sometimes it says it relates to the whole Bhumandala, the whole the greater universe, is not at its right place. And it's normally at that place after annihilation, every time of end of a day of Lord Brahma. The planets are different places, and the earthly, or this particular planet, is lying on the ocean, Garbha Ocean. And as he contemplates the problem, he thinks, this is too much of a task. I better ask the Supreme Lord to help. So the Supreme Lord, to cool Krishna, does something amazing. Now, one thing I'd like to kind of bring up as a thought of consideration. We say that Krishna has pastimes or plays, take certain like lila avatars. But in a more complete sense, Krishna in itself is lila. Just as the sun shines, Krishna exhibits, experiences, or shows himself, experiences himself as lila, lila maya. Everything about him, his whole existence, is lila. His whole reality of Krishna, there is nothing else than himself taking pleasure in himself, called lila. But then there are particular incidents where he shows certain very humorous ways of exhibiting this enjoyment. And that one is to reciprocate with the desires and the prayers of devotees. And in this particular incident, Lord Brahma and Swayambhu Manu, great devotees, in fact, the whole narration takes place because Vidura asked about Swayambhu Manu, what is his activities, because he's a great devotee. So then this narration comes even more into the picture of how the Lord reciprocates with such devotees. And in this instance, he chooses to appear, he manifests, although he's already there. But now it becomes more manifested, more visible. And his appearance first is very small. Like it says, like the size of the thumb. Huh? And he appears from an unusual place, and not just popping out of the air or falling down, boop. He just manifests himself, he makes himself visible first as a little tiny boar coming out of the nostril. And then he expands very quickly, into a huge form, entering the sky. So a flying boar. Again, this is all mystical because it's Chinmaya. It's the transcendental energy of the Lord. Nothing to do with the material energy. Anything is possible there. Thoughts are deeds. Or there's no vastu, or in this world where there is separation between our thinking and manifesting, or there's no such a thing. There is not this type of quality. So it's Krishna desires everything, or pastime. We know, for instance, in Jaya Madai, when Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is in front of them, suddenly the Sudarshan chakra manifests. So Mahaprabhu suddenly is Mahavishnu, or Vishnu, not Mahavishnu, but Vishnu. And with Vishnu, of course, this chakra is there. Within a second, just there. It's all there already. So here, this pastime incarnation of the Lord is all potent, has all the potencies of the Lord. So he flies in the air. Something else is happening that this is also explained, and in that particular chapters, of this canto, how two great personalities decide to take part in that pastime or in the Lord's pastimes as adversaries or demons or somewhere engaging, giving pleasure to the Lord in the form as enemies. So one of them, the Jai Vijay personalities who had done a slight offense, but all orchestrated ultimately. When the question comes, who is in fault? Are the Kumaras offending the doorkeepers or the doorkeepers offending the Kumaras? The conclusion is, actually, it is a pastime. It is Krishna's arrangement. So this whole orchestration takes place, so this demon take place, and then there is Kasyapa and Didi, who also do something unusual, an unnormal time, facilitating the appearance of these two personalities as great demons. Amazing things. So everything kind of ties together. At some point, we have this big Hiranyaksha demon who travels all over the universe and scaring and torturing and causing disturbance. So when the earth lies on the Garbhodaksha and Varaha goes down, Hiranyaksha says or thinks, this earth is part of my dominion. I'm supposed to hold her. I'm supposed to control. And plus, he was already looking for a strong enemy or somebody who has the strength. I think Varuna was there who refused to fight with Hiranyaksha, saying, this is not a fit match. You're too strong. You have to look for Vishnu. So he's kind of on the look for that. And sure enough, it just happens. As the boar goes down, lifts up the earth, this demon attacks. And then what happens to the earth? It's put in a safe place, it's put aside, probably a mystical way also. And the Lord is more worried, not worried about his own success or in that, but that the earth feels safe. So, and also the observers, the whole show takes place, and Swayambhumanu and Brahma, all and the sages, they all see, and they're kind of a little worried what's the outcome. So when dusk enters, the fight goes on for long, so then they think it's really unauspicious now, because then the demons get stronger, and they also kind of are in anxiety, is he going to do it, make it? Anyway, at some point, I think he just slaps him, right? The Lord just slaps Hiranyaksha and he's finished. And then pastime continues, the earth is put on the proper place, and of course everyone is happily relieved. There was some tension, some cause for worries. But the devotees ultimately are very much pleased and have experienced a wonderful interaction of the Lord in showing his might and strength and his unconquerable position. Sometimes people think of demons in terms of someone who has an ability to compete with the Lord. There's a large group of people who factually think of the Supreme Lord having a competitor named Satan. Satan. That there is such a thing as something that has almost equally a position or might and can really cause disturbance to what the Lord's plan would be. I know, for instance, the whole Western world basically has this idea. The Muslims think when people worship deities, that is put prasad, they call it, or put prasad, something like it's worship of matter. And it's doing that, entangles the living entity, the jiva, into more matter. And the whole setup is by Satan. Satan causes people to do things like that. Or then the whole Western, modern Western world with the evangelists, with the Christian preachers, they always speak about Satan having a fight with the Lord and causing the destruction of the universe, finally that the Lord can come and successfully save everybody. So as more the tension builds up, like in the Middle East or Iran, wherever, somewhere in the world, they actually basically think now, soon the Lord will appear. Because Satan has done so much damage, it's about time that he comes. So basically they push the whole thing. It becomes more and more tense, and that's what presently is in the world. The world is very tense. Anything can happen anytime. Big nuclear bombs in the pockets or behind. America has about 6,000, and China about 400,000, and Pakistan and India, and all have these huge bombs which have a power 1,000 times more than the one in Hiroshima. Each of them. Very scary situation. Some people think it's something nice, wonderful, because it makes the Lord appear. Satan is soon defeated. Kind of ideas like that, no? So here we have a complete different understanding what God is. All these pastimes or these activities are completely in control of the Lord. He's there with like a big orchestra, as one man, as a stick, huh? Everything is moving as it has to. Perfectly well. Everyone plays his proper part. And the outcome is always glorious. Krishna wins. He's so cool. Yeah. So that's in a nutshell this pastime. And for us as practicing Vaishnavas, sadhakas, this yearly event just is a way of enhancing our understanding of what the absolute reality is, and we start to see, in contrast, what this material world seems to be is not very interesting or attractive. Satyavrata, King Satyavrata, in that prayer when he narrates a pastime of Damodar, a pastime which is always there, narrated at different times, but generally we hear it narrated by Satyavrata. He says, Kim Anye, what else is there? What's better, no? Just to be, how is it called? Mana avirashtam kim anye. To repose the mind, to be conscious of these wonderful activities of the Lord, especially the sweet interaction between devotees and the Lord becoming subordinate to the devotees. Such activities are so beautiful that in comparison, liberation, to speak of materialistic and benefits, is no comparison. What else is there? What more? Or what else could compare, even slightly? So by our recalling such pastimes, we should become more and more aware. For Krishna's reality is much more beautiful, much more interesting, captivating than what the material world seems to offer. There's nothing in comparison. Hare Krishna. Shivarade Faki Jai.
Thank you very much, Sankirtan Prabhu. There are prayers offered to Lord Varahadev in the fifth canto, the residents of Jambudweep in the northern part. They worship Lord Varahadev. And those prayers are very important to us because for this reason, Varahadev lifts the earth from a filthy place. So praying to Lord Varahadev will help lift us from a filthy place and elevate us and help us resolve our entanglements in the material energy. So one of these prayers, the first one is Om Namo Bhagavate Mantra Tattva Lingaya Yagyakrit Tattve Mahadvara Vayavaya Mahapurushaya Namaha Karma Shuklaya Triyugaya Namaste. These are very technical descriptions of God. They don't talk about the pastime of Varahadev. They don't talk about his bodily features. They just talk about how he is fully the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Karma Shuklaya, he resolves the reactions of our past sins. And he's also Tri Yugaya. Interesting that he performs the Leela activities in three ages, but not in the Kali Yuga, where he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is a nice meditation on Lord Varahadeva today, to think how he can lift us, elevate us, and help us. Very much in the mood of Lord Narasimhadeva. Varahadeva ki jai. So now we'll go on to, very briefly, for the 10th canto, today's Srimad Bhagavatam verse. We'll read the synonyms first. Good. So this verse comes at the end of the Dainakasura Leela, when Krishna and Balaram have come home and are under the loving care of their mothers. Gatadhanva sramau tatram majanon mardanadivi Nivim vasitva ruchiram Divya shraganda manditao. Translation. By being bathed and massaged, the two young lords were relieved of the weariness caused by walking on the country roads. Then they were dressed in attractive robes and decorated with transcendental garlands and fragrances. Going to read yesterday's translation also. Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini, acting most affectionately toward their two sons, offered all the best things to them in response to their every desire and at the various appropriate times. Then in this verse, those exact details are presented. The garlands, fragrances, undergarments, robes, and massage as well. Then the next verse. After dining sumptuously on the delicious foods given to them by their mothers and being pampered in various ways, the two brothers lay down upon their excellent beds and happily went to sleep in the village of Raj. Taiwan has arrived. Taiwan and China have been united. These verses are very interesting in the context of the very brutal fight that they just follow. Krishna and Balaram have killed all of these demons, Dainakasura and his pack, and now they go home and their mothers massage and bathe and put them to bed, completely unaware of what has happened. So, this is a very important lesson, that Krishna is full of variety. And because Krishna is full of variety, there is no one single way to serve him. He interacts with his devotees in a fabulous varieties of ways. Anything from Varaha to Yashoda and Rohini massaging. That is important for every devotee to understand. Srila Prabhupada was once very briefly summarized the difference between Buddhism, impersonalism, and Vaishnavism. He said that Buddhism teaches that the material construction is real, but we are able to end it, nirvana, through proper meditation, etc. So we are involved in it, but we can become disinvolved and end our involvement forever. No more existence. The impersonalist teaches that the material construction is real, but it's underlied by a spiritual oneness. Entering that spiritual oneness is the goal of meditation and spiritual life. But the Vaishnava philosophy teaches that the material construction is also real and tangible, not our home, but we have a an alternative spiritual construction full of varieties. That is our true abode and the true destination of spiritual life. So here is a perfect example of that variety. I would like to tell you a little story. My good friend Charu Prabhu. Has anyone heard of the temple in Spanish Fork, Utah, in the United States? So this is a amazing, beautiful temple constructed right in the heart of the part of America where there's one religion that's very strong, the Mormon religion. And Charu Prabhu and his wife, Vaibhavi, have gone there and developed this beautiful temple and great following of friends amongst the Mormon community. So I went to visit Charu this summer, and he told me a story about meeting Srila Prabhupada when he was the temple president in Sydney in 1973, I believe, or 72. Anyway, he had a moment alone with Srila Prabhupada, so he asked him a question. How long does it take to become purified chanting Hare Krishna? He said that Prabhupada thought for a moment, and he said, about 40 years. So when I heard this, I was very happy because 4 months from that time would be my 40th anniversary in Krishna consciousness. And I thought, at last. So 4 months went by. And my heart was still just as full of material desires, and my mind was just as lackadaisical, and my attraction to hearing and chanting about Krishna just as lame. So still I was staying in Krishna consciousness, and I realized at that time that Srila Prabhupada had given this blessing, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But this is not actually a blessing. It is an order. To stay in Krishna consciousness 40 years, to have the chance to become purified, means we have to do something that makes us happy. Because the living entity cannot subsist in a miserable condition. Something will change. Ananda Maya Vyasat. The jiva is by nature seeking pleasure. So we have to find something, if we want to stay in Krishna consciousness and be purified, we have to find something that makes us happy. We have to make those adjustments. If we are not happy, then we're not following Srila Prabhupada's instruction. So just as there are varieties in the spiritual world, there are varieties of things that make devotees happy. And that's because there are varieties of relationships with Krishna. For example, we're reading about this parental rasa, this relationship of the mothers with their sons. That relationship is predicated upon the service given by the parents to the child. Because the child is dependent and cannot do so many things, and therefore needs the parents to take care of it. So the impersonalist would like to make Krishna into an orphan. He has no parents. They would like to make him into a loner. He has no friends. But this is not the case. He enjoys all of these relationships. The conjugal relationship is considered the most complete because it contains all of these elements and the relationship of intimacy unique to that relationship. So the husband must be able to give the wife a sense of protection and security, just like a father does for the child. And the wife must be able to give the husband a sense of being comforted, just as a mother does for the child. So these relationships are contained there. So in looking back on my 40 years in Krishna consciousness, I was thinking, I had 10 wonderful years as a brahmachari. And in that period of time, I was distributing books, and life was so ecstatic, I did not know that a human being was entitled to that much happiness. And so my GBC mentor said, I would like you to take sannyas. I said, I'm 24. He said, Lord Chaitanya was 24 when he took sannyas. I was thinking, yes, what does that have to do with me? By Krishna's grace, I did not take that offer. That would have been the biggest mistake of my life. And instead, after some time, I got married. And now I've been married for 31 years. And so I learned something being married that I did not learn as a brahmachari. And for those who are renunciates, I would just like to echo this lesson, that it is the same lesson that we're seeing in these two verses, or these three verses, about the love that is exchanged between individuals. Brahmachari life is meant for tapasya. But tapasya can make the heart grow very hard. To remain happy in Krishna consciousness, and thus to retain our position, we have to learn how to give love to others. It is not enough to just be renounced and detached. We have to give love, and then we can be happy, and then we can have relationships, and then we can sustain our renunciation. So for me, being married, having children, drew out of me the ability to love that I was not aware of as a renunciate. Not just me, not necessarily for everybody. But I see in the very successful renunciates that we have in our society that they have this wonderful ability to give love to everybody. That is very important to be happy. If we cannot give love, we cannot receive love either. So the people in our lives are very, very special. I learned recently that the human body has, you know how many cells there are in the human body? And every cell exhibits the qualities of the presence of a jiva, right? Birth, growth, duration of life, passing of byproducts, dwindling, and death. Every single cell. There are 60 trillion cells in a human body. You thought you were alone in there, right? 60 trillion cells, and even more amazing is that all but 10 trillion of them are non-human. Most of them are non-human parasites or, what do they call it, sycophants that live off and bring benefit to the human being. The skin is almost all consisting of these other foreign living entities. They keep all the rest of us in one place. So, how rare it is to find a human being. That one living entity who's dominating this body is a very rare soul indeed, to begin with. In fact, in one tablespoon of earth, there are as many living entities as there are human beings on the whole planet. So, how special it is to find a human being. And then manusyanam sahasreshu kaschidyatati siddhayi, out of so many living beings, to find somebody who is interested in the absolute truth. And then even amongst those people, to find someone who's actually understanding the mission of human life. So we are very blessed to have these relationships with devotees in our lives. When Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, what is the one unbearable sorrow? He said, any sorrow is bearable except the separation of the devotee. So for us to learn to give love, truly give love to other people, is critical to staying in Krishna consciousness and remaining happy as devotees. Nobody can be Krishna conscious by themselves. Srila Prabhupada said that if somebody thinks that, they are living a hallucination. How to give love in the association of devotees? Rupa Goswami writes about this very pertinent question in the Nectar of Instruction. Tadati pratigranati bhunkte bojayate chaiva, giving prasadam, accepting prasadam, giving gifts, accepting gifts, and revealing one's mind in confidence and inquiring confidentially. One of the things that makes devotees very unhappy is this inability to reveal the mind, this inability to be oneself. And the reason it's difficult is because other devotees have not learned how to be confidential. Right? So my mother used to tell me, if you want to have a friend, then you have to be a friend. So to be a friend, you have to be confidential. You have to respect what your friend tells you and hold it in confidence, and really hold it in confidence. Not like, Prabhu, don't tell anyone this, but, you know, or Prabhu, I need you to keep this confidential, but, right? To be able to hear from others and keep it just between us, that is how to be a friend. And if you are so blessed to have a friend in whom you can confide, then you can also experience that satisfaction. See? So this is absolutely essential to staying happy. This is the reason many brahmacharis get married, because they don't have confidential relationships amongst their peers. And so they seek that. Now, is it a fall down for a brahmachari to get married? Prabhupada was asked this question. He said, what is the question of a fall down? It is already the lowest position. This is a great imbalance that exists sometimes amongst neophyte renunciates, thinking that it is a very elevated position. In fact, the grihasthas who are successful in Krishna consciousness are more advanced. They're more advanced because it's much more difficult. See, brahmacharya life means everything is surrounding you, supporting Krishna consciousness. Grihastha life means you have to create that environment. You have to have enough determination and resourcefulness to create your Krishna conscious environment. And that grihastha ashram is critical to the success of the brahmacharya ashram. First of all, where will the other brahmacharis come from? And second, how will they afford their japatis without the help of the grihasthas? See? So, to minimize the value of loving relationships is a huge mistake in spiritual life. If you want to stay in Krishna consciousness 40 years and get the chance to have people ask you to give classes, then you need to find out how to awaken and give that love for other devotees in the heart. So that is my thought on this. First, Prabhu, would you like to add anything?
I'd like to ask a question.
Please.
You just use now the word love, love, loving relationships. How does that fit into, let's say, understanding that the ultimate goal of our practice is Krishna Prem, as a pure stage. Now we speak about love. To what extent is that love, love, and to what extent is it actually selfish love? Say, it's in the left you have the extreme dark, calm, selfish, and then you have extreme pure, full, and that's what we want. Now, in between, we are in this world and dealing with each other, and we speak about having loving relationship, but I don't think it's the loving relation the level of prem, correct? Because prem is a very high achievement. So we speak about love, Is it love or what is it? That's my question. What is it actually?
Excellent question. The answer is that it is a beginning stage of love for Krishna, love for the devotees. The Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the best thing is to love me without reservation. If you can't do that, follow the rules and regulations, which is really pretending. If I did love Krishna, I'd bow down, I'd chant, I'd dance. You know? But if you can't do that, then at least work with detachment, or work for me, excuse me, that's next. If you can't work for me, then work for some selfless purpose. So see, there is this gradation going down from prema to practice to detachment. So love, like in the family, for example, is detached love. It is selfless love. That's what one experiences. When you have a child and you bring a child in this world, just automatically you love that child selflessly. Srila Prabhupada said it is the closest thing. The mother's love for the child is the closest thing to pure love of Krishna in this world. Right?
Well, a little bit indication of
it. Yes. But my point is this. Lust is imbued with selfishness. What am I going to get out of this relationship? Prema is imbued with selflessness. It is all for Krishna. And to learn to love others selflessly is certainly a critical step on the path to prema. How are we going to experience selfless love for Krishna if we're totally self-centered in all other areas of life, in all other relationships? So, yes, it is not prema, but it is an essential step, I would say, in developing prema. And again, renunciates who are able to give love to others selflessly, who can encourage people regardless of their ashram or their status, who can appreciate people regardless of their gender or their age, those are renunciates who will be successful in developing prema.
Can we go a little further in this? Just let's see the example of Bharat Maharaj. I don't have an agenda, no. I don't really know what
right.
I should think of it.
It's but white versus saffron, go ahead.
But Bharat Maharaj having love, right? He had love for the deer.
Yes.
And that particular emotional, or that particular feeling caused him to slide away from his real goal of life.
Yes. Yes. So the man-deer relationship is not one of the recognized ashrams. This is a big mistake in a neophyte understanding of Prabhupada's instructions, that the condemnation of household life found in the scriptures applies across the board. In fact, it does not apply to the varnashrams, to the grihastha ashram. If Krishna is at the center, if husband and wife serve together cooperatively in serving the deity, if the children are raised in a Krishna-conscious environment, then that's just as good as renunciation. That is renunciation. That is yukta vairagya. So we should not mistakenly think that marriage is a step backwards. We should not mistakenly think that devotees who are married are in the deep, dark well of material existence. No. You remember Srila Prabhupada's last great desire in 1977. He said, I've established 50% of my mission, book distribution. Now I want to establish varnashram. So since then there's been great discussion, what does that mean exactly? But to me it means only one thing. Srila Prabhupada saw that he was creating enthusiastic devotees, but they were having a hard time remaining. So he wanted to make a life where they could stay for 40 years and be purified. So that means grihastha life. And that means happy, balanced, loving relationships. So how to arrange that, it will vary according to whether it's in the city or the country or whatever, by all kinds of circumstances. But the essence of it is that people can be happy and sustain themselves chanting Hare Krishna. sustained happiness. That is the challenge. So whatever situation, one needs to find sustained, fulfilling happiness. One must accept that if one wants to achieve prema. Is that all right? All right, other comments, please. Nityodita Prabhu, please.
Interesting class. When Srila Prabhupada was at New Vrindavan, 1974, he was staying at a house, one of the farmhouses on the ridge, and he was sitting on the lawn, grass, on a blanket, and surrounded by devotees, and suddenly, out of the farmhouse or somewhere else, came these two little kittens. Mm. And they started running towards Prabhupada. And Vridhananda Maharaj tells a story. when he saw the kittens, you know, because back in those days, oh, this is a contaminated being. He should not be near Prabhupada. Dogs, cats, these are low grade. So Vridhananda Maharaj was thinking, what should I do? He was thinking in his mind, how to protect Prabhupada from those kittens. But Prabhupada just got to let them come right to him, and by his feet, they were rolling around and playing. And Prabhupada was recognizing that. And he said, see, even here there is love. So, I think maybe the term affection and service is kind of maybe makes it more clear what kind of relationships we want to have with devotees. Mm-hmm. We should have affection toward every devotee, obviously,
yes.
And we should want to serve every devotee. But I kind of empathize with his question about using the term love in a... Mm-hmm. Of course, Rupa Goswami uses the term love, so... But to clarify that, I was thinking that affection, we should have affection for...
Affection.
Huh?
Priti.
Priti.
Priti purvi.
And what is the...
Affection,
Priti, that's the word in the verse.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's important. So, as far as the deer is concerned, what was the mistake there that he went overboard? It wasn't that he thought, well, let me have some affection for this animal in distress, isn't it? You can comment on it because you brought it up. That there was some, he went overboard with that kind of affection toward, it became a distraction.
Yeah. Well, I brought that example because in his mind, it was the right thing. He wasn't realizing that what turned out to become more and more an attachment and causing ultimately a birth in this species, same species. He identified as genuine, bona fide feeling, probably love, prem. That's my point, no? Yeah. So, although it was actually a material contaminated love, it was lust. Not in a too much selfish sense, but still in the sense I'm great and I have the ability to give to others protection. And I'm doing this now. So the Kshatriya mood, kind of the Kshatriya bhav came through. But then it caused actually him more and more losing sight of the real love, prem. And he got sidetracked like that. So my contention is, could that be a scenario possible for Grihastha that he gets so much affection to his family that he actually becomes distracted from the other goal? That's why I'm saying that example. Yeah. Yes.
This there is a distinction in terms of the relationship of the jiva and Krishna that is unique. And this is discussed in the 10th canto after the Agasura pastime. And Sukadev Goswami, or Parikshit Maharaj, asks, how could the cowherd men and women have had more affection for these I'm sorry, after the Brahma Vimohana Lila, yes. How could they have had more affection for these replacement sons and cows and so forth than their own children? How is that possible? And Sukadeva explains that the love that everybody feels begins with self-love. And the reason we're attached to our families is because they're extensions of our own self. So when they were with the source of their own self-love, we can love ourselves only because Krishna loves us first. So when that person who gives us love first, that allows us to love ourselves, was with them, they felt more love for him even than their own extensions. So your point is correct in that it is an extension of one's selfishness to love one's family and so forth. And the love for Krishna is a superior cut. Yeah, but at the same time, that affection is part of the duty of the grihastha. And nobody can be a good grihastha if they're not able to be affectionate to their wives and children. That is the duty. Yeah. So to... Correct. That purifies him, exactly. That's the point. And that same ability to give affection must be there in the lifelong renunciate as well. That's my point. To sustain and succeed as a lifelong renunciate. Other comments? Questions? All right. We'll end there. Could we just have a few words, Sankirtan?
I just have one thing that came up after class. Some of the devotees came to me after class and they were asking about... They're not married, they're single, but they're wondering about this love for their family members. They're just becoming devotees, and they feel like it seems like a natural thing. The first persons you want to preach to are your family, and it becomes complicated. And so, do you have any insight that, because you're doing a lot of preaching to young people in Florida? So,
yeah, yes, it's very important to be able to show that you're still a human being after you become a devotee. And it takes some conscientiousness to do that. this is the kind of confusion that I'm trying to address here. To think, oh, now I'm Krishna conscious. I don't have to have affection for anybody. They're all nonsense, you know. In fact, it is the activity, it's the behavior of the devotees, Krishna Das Kaviraj says, that draws people to Krishna consciousness, not any philosophical arguments that they make. So this is ordinary etiquette, isn't it? A gentleman. When Srila Prabhupada came to Gainesville in 1971, he was asked, how do I tell your true follower? And he could have said many things. He wears a dhoti, wears a sari, chants Hare Krishna. He said, my follower is a perfect gentleman, or lady by extension. So a gentleman would a gentleman treat his family like, oh, you're just dogs, you're hogs, dogs, and camels? Of course not. A gentleman will treat everybody with respect. Trinadapi sunichena tororiva sahishnina. That verse is not limited to the Vaishnavas. Everybody. Amanina manadena. I don't want respect, but I want to give respect to everyone. So in order to do that, we have to be able to give love. We have to be able to give affection to everyone. Appreciate them as a special spirit soul. Unique. Is that all right? Anything else? I would just like to ask Sankirtan Prabhu, since we're blessed by all these wonderful devotees from mainland China and from Taiwan, could you speak a few minutes about your service and about the service these wonderful devotees do?
Hare Krishna, the wrong person. since 1988-89, devotees are, our ISKCON devotees have been able to spread Krishna consciousness in mainland China. Before that was, we had other places like Hong Kong and also Taiwan. But basically 1988-89, and there was never much news shared with the larger ISKCON community about our activities in China. No BTG articles or such kind of reports. Just for the reason that we always felt, or Tamal Krishna Goswami especially made this important point, if this news go out and then it ends up in the hands of the embassies, Chinese embassies in foreign countries, they were quite, it would be counterproductive. But since 1988-89 until now, many things have happened in spreading Krishna consciousness. One major milestone is the that the Chinese publishing house, government publishing house, cultural publishing house, publishes Bhagavad Gita as it is, and also distributes it. Book distributor Ki Jai. So that, it's a specialized publishing house for religious and cultural. They publish also Quran and Bible and like that. So then, and then we have other books also officially published. Here's Mother Janava and Ekha Chakra. They managed quite early to publish books. They adjusted a little bit, so they go a lot more cultural books, but also full Krishna conscious books. What is it? The art of, what was one, the two we had with the many pictures? Huh? Hidden Glories of India, yeah. Krishna art book like that. Now the big achievement, or it's going to be the big achievement, is the Bhagavatam also in mainland China. Anyway, there is a notion of, I think, a Western idea, which might be not really that correct, that the Chinese government is extremely against religion. It's not really like that, but they're just very careful not to have groups infiltrating the makeup of society, or the web of the and spreading ideas which will later they will have to deal with. And it starts with small things and then it expands and becomes a big movement or something. But when they see us, our movement and the success we have, which is very less, you know, out of billions of people, a few thousand, it's not a big threat. Because one thing is that knowing that we have four regulative principles to be an accepted member or a full-fledged member, plus other things, they are quite sure that we're not going to be a mass movement as such. Millions of, no. And so they're ready from that. And also another view or understanding, cultural understanding, is in Taiwan and also in mainland China, if you talk with a common person, like a taxi driver or somebody, and you say that you follow four regulative principles, no meat eating, illicit sex, like that, they think, very good. It's something they know from their culture, this is something saints and saintly people do. It's not some strange, whereas in the West they would say, what's wrong with you? Are you in a sect or a cult or something like that? So in the main, the general thinking of Chinese people is these are right, good things, you know, of high value, character values, and it's not something one should be alert of. So we are not categorized as a cult or as a dangerous group. And if devotees behave respectfully with parents, and which I just like to add the idea of having respect to even as a new devotee is part of Shraddha. The word Shraddha implies respect. Respect ultimately for Krishna and for the teachings or the acharyas, but also in a general way. Just one becomes very respectful, including to people who helped feeding one and I don't know. That would be part of it. So if devotees are able, and it seems like they do, then they behave properly, respectfully in society, keep their change of consciousness more to them and not make it too, advertise it too big, and then we can go on in China pretty much. Yeah, that's the kind of idea. You know. This group you see here, these are from mainland China, and more or less, yeah, they're from very northeast China. Gets 30 below zero, Celsius, 20, 30, like in some areas. So for them here, it's very warm. And then here is another group. This group is all from Taiwan. I don't, some, maybe the first time, huh? All of them? No, some have, yeah. Then there are groups. I was just with another group, also from mainland China. Some of them were five times already. And they haven't, this part, a very interesting group, a group of yoga people, they haven't had much more association in mainland China, a little separate, but just coming to the Dham, usually Rishikesh, Vrindavan, and Jaipur, or Mayapur, and Bodh Gaya, and Varanasi, just doing that. Now they are having the beats, and very committed that this exposure. And I feel from my experience having people from mainland China come to India and having them see Vrindavan, and then say from Vrindavan they move to Jaipur, for instance, and they see the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they go to the temple of Govindaji, they see the devotees enthusiastic singing and chanting Govinda, and like that, it makes them aware this is not just a small fraction of people somewhere, kind of. And then whenever they move now in India, it's so nice. Wherever you go, we have our temples, Mi Prabhupada. So it's even in the Loi Bazaar, everywhere, pictures, Prabhupada, so many things. So it takes away that initial problem we had in the West, that people start to think this is just one particular group with one particular person who is the sect leader or something, the cult leader. So I found that by doing that, people become quite aware this is a cultural movement, it's a whole culture which is still there. Some remnants of the culture are still there in India, from that, it's like the dress and the eating habits and so on like that. So much for that. Thank you.
Thank you, that was wonderful. Thank you very much. You know, we are very blessed to be in countries where we can freely practice our spiritual path. These devotees who don't have that opportunity are very, very, very special.
I hear this sometimes, but I cannot think of a place better than China to actually spread Krishna consciousness. Extreme contrast. Think of a place where the Muslims are, no? How difficult it is there, no? And even in the West, I can go to France, right? Eka Chakrabhu is originally from France, or you go to a certain place, very hostile, very strange. But in Taiwan, as you go, especially as a monk, or a little differently dressed, some kind of indication, people, you practice something, immediately there's respect. Immediately they have some respect. So, yeah. They may say something like, I have no time, or the boss is not here, or something like that, so to avoid you, but they're always respectful. Lao ban bu zai, in Taiwan they say usually that the boss is not here. So. Although he's the boss himself now. In other words, they're polite in refusing. And then you can push it a little more, and sometimes say, okay, anyway, let me try, give a donation, take a book. So it's quite easier than in Muslim countries or in other places.
Thank you. So I'd like to end class with a traditional Radha Gopinath welcome for these wonderful devotees visiting. Is it all right? Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Srila Prabhupada ki jai!